From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. This week can be best characterized by the Yiddish term, oy vey. Yes, this was an oy vey week on Capitol Hill. Although the meaning cannot be precisely translated, oy vey is meant to convey an expression of dismay and exasperation. Indeed, when the gavel came down on the House of Representatives on Tuesday, October 3rd, the People's House of Congress no longer had an elected speaker, the second person in the presidential line of succession. Historically, the speaker is determined by the majority party of the House of Representatives and is elected to the position by the entire House of Representatives. As a result of a House rules change forced at the outset of Congress, it became much easier to depose the House of Representatives' presiding officer by declaring the speaker post to be vacant. Due to the slender Republican House majority, a vote to vacate the chair took place on October 3rd with a vote of 216 to 210, with 8 Republican members voting against now former Speaker Kevin McCarthy of California. As a consequence of the vacancy, all legislative activities in the House of Representatives came to a screeching halt. No hearings, no legislation, no committee actions, no floor actions, nothing. The House of Representatives will be permitted to reboot only after the election of a new speaker. At this time, the schedule for such an election is uncertain since there are multiple candidates vying for the speakership, including Representative Steve Scalise of Louisiana, the current Republican majority leader, and Representative Jim Jordan of Ohio, chairman of the House Judiciary Committee and an outspoken member of the House Committee on Oversight and Reform. Permit me to back up a bit with regard to the banishment of McCarthy. The catalyst for this banishment were 8 members of the Republican Party who revolted against the former speaker for his permitting a House vote on a bill to keep the government operating through November 17th, the so-called continuing resolution. Failure to have a continuing resolution would have meant a partial government shutdown with the accompanying suspension of a variety of essential government services, a furlough of about 800,000 federal employees, and another 600,000 federal employees, and all the members of the U.S. military working without pay. I would like to add that, in fact, continuing resolution passed the House with an overwhelming 335-91 vote. That's more than 2/3 of the House of Representatives. Also noteworthy was that a majority of the House Republicans, in fact, voted for it, 126-90. Believe it or not, the continuing resolution, which is referred to as H.R. 5860, does in fact have specific implications for postal employees and postal retirees. There is a provision buried deep in the bill that would provide the Office of Personnel Management an additional $28 million to assist the agency in implementing the new Postal Service Health Benefits Program, which will be effective on January 1, 2025. The Office of Personnel Management advised Congress earlier this year that without the additional funding, it would have suffered a funding shortfall, which could have jeopardized implementation of the health program's 2025 start date. Related to health insurance, it's important to note that this year's Federal Employees Health Benefits Program open season, which will run from November 13th through December 11th, will be the last open season in which postal employees and postal retirees participate in the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program open season. I am pleased to let you know that in early November, NAPS Chat will once again have as our guest the Office of Personnel Management official tasked with open season operations. For a moment, permit me to preview briefly next year's open season. In fall 2024, that's a little bit more than a year from now, postal employees and retirees will be able to choose from among health plans participating in the new Postal Service Health Benefits Program. The program will run parallel to the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program, and the benefits offered by the participating plans will be equivalent to those as offered within the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program. Now, permit me to return to the continuing resolution that was recently signed into law by President Biden. The continuing resolution only extends government funding through November 17th. At that point, absent another government funding bill or enactment of a full-year appropriation bill for each of the respective agencies, the government will once again confront a potential shutdown. The question is, will the new speaker be permitted to or precluded from negotiating with the Senate and the White House over government spending? If he is precluded from negotiation, we may be in the same position we were right before the vote 2 weeks ago. And also, what new concessions will the new speaker be forced to award the right-wing rebels in order to win the speaker's gavel? I guess we'll see soon. The work week prior to the House Representatives' dumpster fire, the Senate confirmed Thomas Day to the Postal Regulatory Commission and reconfirmed Robert Taub to the commission. The full Senate approved both Taub and Day by unanimous consent. With their confirmation, the Postal Regulatory Commission will continue to operate at full complement with all five commissioners. It's important to note that during the confirmation hearings for the two commissioners, the Senate Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee members were particularly attentive to the key role the regulator plays in assuring the Postal Service's operational transparency, as well as providing postal accountability, particularly on issues of postal performance. Indeed, the Postal Regulatory Commission's ongoing public inquiry into the Delivering for America plan's facility realignment was an issue brought up at the confirmation hearing. Moreover, both at the PRC and on Capitol Hill, there is growing scrutiny of postal performance, particularly of first-class mail, in the wake of facility realignment. Another issue I'd like to briefly address on this week's NAPS Chat is the growing momentum for legislation to clarify the jurisdiction of the uniformed members of the Postal Inspection Service. They are postal police officers. We anticipate a Senate companion bill for H.R. 3005, that is the House bill, in the very near future. This positive news follows a critical September 28th Office of Inspector General audit report entitled "The United States Postal Service's Response to Mail Theft." In part, the Postal Inspector General concluded that the Postal Service did not have sufficient timelines and actionable milestones to implement initiatives to address mail theft. The continued vulnerability of so-called arrow keys was identified. Most notably, however, the Inspector General identified serious staffing issues with regard to protecting the mail, including the absence of a national assessment of personnel deployment to combat postal crime. NAPS believes that H.R. 3005 and the soon-to-be-introduced Senate version of the bill would make meaningful progress in combating postal-related crime by clarifying that postal police officers do indeed have the authority to protect postal personnel and property and the U.S. mail, whether located inside or outside postal facilities. This is an authority that was recognized by the Postal Service up until the summer of 2020. Since we've covered legislative and regulatory postal matters, let's conclude with the United States Supreme Court. There are two cases that may have an indirect effect on the Postal Service. The first was argued on Monday, October 2nd. The case was the Consumer Financial Protection Board versus the Consumer Financial Services Association. You might wonder what the Federal Consumer Financial Protection Board has to do with the Postal Service. Good question. The case that was argued deals with the scope of federal agencies' operations under the Constitution absent a congressional appropriation. The Consumer Financial Services Association suggests that Article 1, Section 9 of the United States Constitution, the so-called Appropriations Clause, requires federal agencies to operate with an explicit appropriation. The Consumer Protection Agency gets its funding through bank fees paid through the Federal Reserve Board. The Consumer Financial Services Association argued before the Supreme Court that Congress abdicated its constitutional appropriations obligation by enacting a statute which authorized an agency to finance its operations through user fees. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? That's the way the Postal Service is financed. It's financed through postage, user fees, as authorized by the Postal Reform Act of 1970. Admittedly, a Supreme Court ruling in favor of the Consumer Financial Services Association would have to be extremely broad to impact the Postal Service. That's an unlikely, but it's a possible scenario, but it's something to contemplate. Another case that will come before the Supreme Court during this court term that could implicate the Postal Service and the Postal Regulatory Commission is the case known as Loper-Bright Enterprises versus Raimondo. Gina Raimondo is the current U.S. Secretary of Commerce. Loper-Bright is a group of commercial fishing companies who object to a rule issued by the National Marine Fisheries Services that requires fishing companies to pay certain monitoring fees. You may ask, what does a fisheries service have to do with the Postal Service? Good question. Loper-Bright argues that the fisheries service overstepped its authority in promulgating regulations. The case concerns the limits of deference accorded a federal agency when the underlying statute is ambiguous. For the past 40 years, generally speaking, courts have deferred to federal agency decisions in how to carry out an ambiguous law, so long as the agency's interpretation of the law is reasonable. This is referred to as Chevron deference, in recognition of the primary litigant in the 1984 Supreme Court ruling, Chevron USSA. A Supreme Court ruling in favor of Loper-Bright Enterprises could have significant implications for all federal agencies and the conduct of their operations with ambiguous legislative statutes, including the Postal Service and the Postal Regulatory Commission. With that being the last word this week, I want to thank NapsChat listeners for logging on. If you enjoy NapsChat and learned something new, please leave us a positive review in the Apple Podcast Store. And more importantly, share NapsChat with your friends and colleagues. In the meantime, stay safe and stay healthy.
I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter and make